First reading is taken from John chapter 4 verses 7 to 11 and can be found on page 1227 of the Pew Bibles and on page 1882 of the Blue Bible. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. This is how God showed his love among us. He sent his one and only Son into the world that we might live through him. This is love, not that we loved God, but that he loved us and sent his Son as an astonishing sacrifice for our sins. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. This is the word of the Lord. Second reading is taken from 1 Corinthians chapter 8 verses 1 to 13 and can be found on page 1149 of the Pew Bible and page 2023 of the Blue Bible. Now, about food sacrificed to idols, we know that we all possess knowledge. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. The man who thinks he knows something does not yet know as he ought to know. But the man who loves God is known by God. So then, about eating food sacrificed to idols, we know that an idol is nothing at all in the world and that there is no God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is but one God, the Father from whom all things come and for whom we live, and there is but one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom all things came and through whom we live. But not everyone knows this. Some people are still so accustomed to idols that when they eat such food, they think of it as having been sacrificed to an idol. And since their conscience is weak, it is defiled. But food does not bring us nearer to God. We are no worse if we do not eat, and no better if we do. Be careful, however, that the exercise of your freedom does not become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone with a weak conscience sees you who have this knowledge eating in an idol's temple, won't he be emboldened to eat what has been sacrificed to idols? So this weak brother for whom Christ died is destroyed by your knowledge. When you sin against your brothers in this way and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if what I eat causes my brother to fall into sin, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause him to fall. This is the word of the Lord.
So here we are, episode 9 of the saga of the Corinthians. And even more controversies hit the headlines. It's no surprise to us by now to see division on another thorny issue. This time, it's whether to eat meat sacrificed to idols. This episode focuses on Paul's advice on how to handle this meat controversy. Jonathan said in episode 1, way back in June, we were going to have some meaty issues, and this is the week for them. This passage definitely has concerns which more than meets the eye. Okay, I'm not going to make it as a comedian. Not only was animal sacrifice common in a Roman colony like Corinth, nearly all meat available in a city would have been sacrificed to one god or another. So this would have been a real issue for them. In this obscure practice of animal sacrifice, I'd like to concentrate on what it means to us today. So Paul tells us in verse 8, food will not bring us close to God. We are no worse off if we do not eat, and no better off if we do. Only, take care this liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to others. Cutting to the chase, I think Paul is saying that we are responsible and accountable to each other. He is explaining that it matters what effect we have on others, and it matters how we care for each other. It brought my train of thought onto one of my favourite topics. Not meat, but shoes. I love shoes. Several years ago, this drink coaster was given to me. Buy shoes and look great. Well, that's my motto. That's why I buy shoes. But shoes need to be suitable for various functions. I suppose they need to be comfortable and fit for purpose. But that probably hasn't always been my criteria. I've spared you the visual aids of my real cowboy boots bought in Texas, even though I can't ride a horse, never mind round up cattle. Or my wonderfully impractical high-heeled slippers. Or my wedding shoes, which were the only thing Tom saw of my outfit before we got married. And his comments when I asked him if he liked them, quite seriously he said, "Well, I suppose that brooch could be removed and you can dye them." Before my ordination, I was reminded that my shoes should be black and not pink. So new black shoes were bought. Unfortunately, as practical as ever, the stiletto heel stuck in the grid at Dorchester Abbey, and I was there pulling my shoe out of it, standing barefoot in the aisle. Fortunately, not everyone could see that. Now, my reason for talking about shoes instead of meat is the saying, before you criticise a man, walk a mile in his shoes. I wonder if Paul's sensitivity is all about walking in someone else's shoes. Verse 4, we know that no idol in the world really exists and that there is no God but one. Those in the know, in the Christian in-group, had this knowledge, and it was obvious to them the meat offered to idols wasn't going to hurt them. But wear another person's shoes in Corinth and see that some Christians had been worshippers at idol shrines. They knew what went on there. And once you had shared in the dark but powerful world, it may be difficult in your memory and your imagination to separate eating meat from the whole thing. The smell of the meat may even bring back previous idolatry, prostitution and wrong living, all things they had been involved with before their conversion. This situation was inevitably aggravated by the strict kosher laws of the Jewish people. Further complications would have been introduced where Gentile converts were urged to abstain from certain foods. On the other hand, though, getting too pernickety about food would mean that Christians would virtually cut themselves off from everybody in Corinth. Paul, once again, is embroiled in an argument on two fronts. You have to feel sorry for him. He just wants a common sense approach that doesn't cause further rivalry and trouble. He wanted to make sure whatever was done built others up. And he reminds us in verse 1, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. Paul is prioritising love over knowledge, and says this is what should determine our behaviour. Paul obviously had his own opinion about meat, but for the sake of unity, he didn't push it. He was willing to compromise for the sake of resolution. Verse 9, you must be careful in case a right of yours leads another to be lured back into their old life. The whole of Paul's argument becomes a practical example of following the law of love. Love will restrict itself for the sake of others. Paul is not going to eat meat so as to avoid another Christian to fall, and he is demonstrating how Christian love looks, the overriding principle of it all, agape love, which wants to give, to help, to build up. In today's context, there is nothing wrong with having a glass of wine or offering a beer at, say, our Father's Day barbecue. However, if we'd have known that there were people who had previous serious alcohol problems, and the beer or wine may lead them back to this, maybe we should think twice. Our knowledge that a glass of wine or beer in itself isn't harmful, and we have the freedom to enjoy it, Paul is saying in these verses, it would be better not to if it's going to cause another Christian to fall. Another example, we could decide as a church to have a day out at the Cheltenham Gold Cup or Ladies' Day at Ascot, dress up with hats and posh shoes, of course. But if we know one of our group has a history on gambling at the races, betting on the favourite or the long shot at 100 to 1, losing their job, their marriage, their home because of it, you can imagine them having great difficulty. And it would be better, for the sake of another, not to go on that occasion. This does not mean that we need to prevent people doing things that are harmless in themselves. We certainly do not need so many restrictions that we become separated from the society we live in. We just need to be discerning about the impact our freedom to choose something has on somebody else, and to make sure that we put the love of God, the gospel of Christ, at the heart of it. Maybe we do need to experience the world from another person's perspective, to view life from their point of view. There will be times when, for the sake of another, we might have to act differently than we would otherwise. If our behaviour is a stumbling block to someone, then we should think very seriously about changing that behaviour. This is not about knowledge or our freedom to do something. It is about building others up. This principle, laid down for us in chapter 8 of 1 Corinthians, is of great importance today. And Paul's conclusion is that he and we should do our utmost not to hinder another person. Often, we can find the authentic voice of our faith when we try someone else's shoes on. See with the eyes of another. Listen with the ears of another. Feel with the heart of another, and look at the wider spiritual context with wisdom and compassion. Let's just take a moment and wonder what it really may be like in someone else's shoes. Literally experience the world from another person's perspective, to walk in their shoes, to view life from their living conditions, and to feel what it feels like to be that person. Someone who is chronically sick and in pain. Someone struggling with their sexuality. Someone who is a refugee. Someone who has been out of work for years. Someone struggling with addictions. Someone living on our streets in Didcot or Abingdon or Oxford. Someone who is housebound and isolated. Let's try those shoes on. It may keep us away from words or behaviour that would hurt or belittle or destroy or cause another Christian to fall. Wearing a different pair of shoes can teach you a lot about another's story. One of the classic books many of us probably read at school, To Kill a Mockingbird, tells us, "You never really know a man until you understand things from his point of view, until you climb into his skin and walk around in it." My challenge this morning is to take off your shoes and, figuratively speaking, put on someone else's. Think yourself into another person's shoes, a strange, different pair. What would it be like to walk a mile in them? Maybe when we go home, we could have a look at our own shoes. Use them as a reminder of special days, the lovely little shoes that Cody's got on, and some fab shoes that some of his relatives have. May remind us of holidays, of painful days, of difficult days. Our shoes may remind us of other times, other people, other places. Times when we were too big for our own boots. Let's use our shoes as prompts for sensitivity and for prayer. I love this poem by Russ Parker. "Wild spirit of the living God, make me cool waters in someone else's parched land, a sheltered place for the fallen, a haven for the wounded, a safe place for the frightened, and a highway to the wanderer, a still place for the runaway, and a home for the weary, a strong place for the weak, and a hill for the ones that want to see further. Wild spirit of the living God, give me a listening heart instead of an informed mind, so that I meet someone else's need rather than my own. So remembering my day, let's take your shoes off when you get home. I'm not asking you all to do it now. And try on someone else's. You may find yourself walking on holy ground. The Lord be with you.